Blog Talk Radio.
Trump had a victorious arrival in Arizona, and he was not really resisted. He didn't really have the crowds come out to fight him as usual. And so that every one of these rallies that he has reconfirms his base. In the meantime, of course, going off the script that could have come off of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, James Clapper, the former head of Intel, said that Trump is quite possibly insane. So you've got these basic storylines being developed by the left. Before Trump came in, he was Hitler, which they have reconfirmed because he didn't specifically call out the neo-Nazis, because he didn't specifically call out the neo-Nazis. Then, of course, he's a Hitler. And then Russia, he's a Russian spy. He is an agent for Russia. His people are agents for Russia. That didn't pan out, but it doesn't matter because you had Charlottesville, which was a contrived event because they didn't call the police to action. So it was going to turn into a fight from Antifa against the alt-right. And who wins that in the media but the Antifa and the left? And that's used to attack Trump. And so now we're going back to one of the first narratives, which is stating that Trump is mentally unfit for office. So the left is going to follow very basic and predictable claims that are totally unoriginal in attacking Trump and trying to tear him out of office. Each one thinks they're doing the will of God. And each one thinks that they're serving the entire globe. They're serving history by attacking him. That's how bereft of ideas the left is, that they honestly have convinced themselves that if democracy itself falls because of their constant, continuous, unremitting attacks against Trump, who is his own worst enemy, certainly, often. But these people believe even if democracy and constitutionalism itself fall, then history will thank them for a millennium for getting Trump out of office and saving the human race. That's how deranged these people are. Instead of allowing the guy that was lawfully and fairly elected into office, they constantly serve whatever God they think that whatever spirit, whatever force, Gaia, whatever it is, to try to get rid of this guy, because they can't think of anything higher, anything better, because they don't have anything better. In the meantime, I have to ask you, is Donald Trump the greatest survivor and apprentice? Is he? Sure seems like it. Here's a little bit from this Don Lemon. If you've got lemon, if somebody gives you a lemon, turn him into an anchor. Don Lemon. CNN anchor rants about Trump's sanity as conservative media cheers. These people are so really just deranged against Trump. The people who need the mental evaluation are the mainstream media and the political left.
I'm just going to speak from the heart here. What we have witnessed was a total eclipse of the facts. Someone who came out on stage and lied directly to the American people and left things out that he said in an attempt to rewrite history, especially when it comes to Charlottesville. He's unhinged. it's embarrassing. And I don't mean for us, the media, because he went after us, but for the country. This is who we elected president of the United States.
Yeah, you elected him. Let him do his job. Don Lemon, please consider taking a vacation. You can't do your job fairly. You can't get up and report the facts yourself because you work at CNN. And by definition, that means that you're a propaganda mill. You can't do your job. Think about taking a sabbatical. If you want to get up and lecture other people about getting up and lying and leaving out facts. I mean, this is, the irony here is so rich. I just, you know, what do you say about these people? The guy was fairly elected. You've attacked him since before he went into office. So you get, you don't get to get up and claim that you gave him a fair chance, and that this is so, these are ideas that came out of the Donald Trump's own narrative. It's your false narrative that you're pumping out there to poison people's minds. And unfortunately, some people fall for it. So anyway, good morning. It is the 23rd, and we went through our eclipse. We got to the other end of the eclipse, so haven't heard any New Mexico eclipse stories. Get you some headlines here at 6:13. Protest pushes back in Phoenix. Tear gas fills street. President threatens government shutdown over border wall. Probably end up terminating NAFTA. Liberating towns of illegals. CNN anchor rants about the president's sanity. James Clapper, I question Trump's fitness for office. Maybe he's looking for a way out. So, I mean, what are we going to do about the mainstream media that is just filled full of liars and propagandists? Just because you're fighting for the right cause doesn't mean that you can do propaganda, does it? In the meantime, Trump is fighting with McConnell over what the Senate has been up to. The Senate and the Congress's numbers are at an all-time low. I think they're at 13%. People have about a third as much support for the Congress that they do for Trump. But, you know, one of the problems has been this, you know, it's hard to understand how much of this is just the incompetence of Congress and the idea that they're going to do whatever they want and then blame it on Trump. And then, and you know, obviously a lot of people in the GOP are working against a lot of these politicians are working against Trump, and they're trying to get him to fall. But these people, do they ever ask themselves, if they remove the president of the United States, what's it going to do to the party? I mean, the GOP is in an unprecedented position of power across the United States. They've got the House nationally. They got the Senate. They got the presidency. And they've got close to, I think it is 20. I think they have 26 states where they totally control the House and the Senate and the governor office. And then there's only six states that are fully Democrat, and the GOP should be riding high, and yet they're allowing the media to destroy the party. They're afraid of the media. They need some people who are unafraid to stand up and tell the truth. And if that means defending the president, yeah, because you can't have a party in leadership without a leader. But maybe they got so spoiled being in the minority when they felt like they could do anything they wanted and never get called out for it. So they did whatever they wanted, and they pretended they were against Obamacare, but they refused to remove it. And then John McCain, who's hateful, whose brain is now unfortunately full of cancer and has always acted a little deranged, to be honest, shoots down the repeal and replace on Obamacare. Because why? Because he's there for the people. Who knows what John McCain thinks? But it is terribly sad that these guys get a chance to finally remove this law, and they can't even agree amongst themselves. ESPN pulled an anchor out of a game because his name happened to be Robert Lee, and he was commenting in a game in UVA. That's how politically correct ESPN. ESPN, by the way, is in free fall. They have lost tens of millions of subscribers. And one of the reasons that they've done this, I should get a clip on this, is one of the reasons this has happened is because they have brought leftism into sports. It's not just that they're politicizing it. It's that they brought in leftism. So, and they don't care because, you know, obviously they don't care because they've got such a big viewer base. They've had to get rid of a bunch of their talent. And, but they don't care because they're owned by Disney. And so I'll have a little bit on that when we come back. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450-805-6180. AM 1450, and we'll be right back. I wasn't even really planning on getting into this, but it's been a big issue out there for quite a while. It is the political poisoning of ESPN. Now, you can claim that your politics are true, they're accurate, etc. They're just and they're right. But does that mean, therefore, that you have to apply your politics to, for example, a sports network? If you have control of a sports network, I mean, everybody, you know, has some political ideas. Some people are to the left. Some people are to the right. There's libertarians out there. There's people with other beliefs. But if you have a political stance, and let's just say it's very deeply felt and well thought out, and you are a leftist, you're a true liberal's liberal, and you stand for the truth, you fight for justice, you'd be one of the first people in the front lines of Antifa. You're on the island of Antifa, and fighting against the white Nazi, neo-Nazi horde. Does that mean that you need to bring your politics into that you need to bring your politics into this situation? And my answer to that is right here. We've got something from Jason Whitlock on this.
Speak for yourself, host, on Fox Sports 1. All right, sir, what do you say to what Mr. Labattard had to say?
Well, I'm one of those critics, I guess, that he's talking to, and I'm not someone bothered by diversity. I am certainly pro-diversity. I was originally hired to run the Undefeated website, which was intended to employ and is employing 50 to 60 African-American sports writers and journalists. I think that's an easy cop-out to say that the critics are people that are bothered by diversity. I certainly am not, and have benefited from a media environment that welcomes diversity.
Is it true to say, Jason, that in your opinion, that ESPN has a liberal bias and it intrudes into their programming and the appearance of their anchors on air?
I think that the entire media is being influenced to go a far left direction. And I think that the entire media is distracted by liberal politics and not focused on business. I think it's, you know, acutely affecting ESPN. I wrote that in the Wall Street Journal. And so, yeah, I think the entire media feels a lot of pressure to go left, and ESPN has, you know, moved left in a way that's probably, in my view, not as good for business as staying objective and more down the road.
Jason, you wrote a piece recently about Colin Kaepernick, and you said that he was, it said, you read it in the Wall Street Journal, the headline, let me show everybody the headline. Colin Kaepernick is a victim of his own supporters. I noticed that Kaepernick has not been signed to any team for the next season. What's your point here?
My point is that we had a city councilwoman in Seattle over the last weekend start campaigning for the Seahawks to sign Colin Kaepernick. This is what I'm talking about.
So, Colin, I just want to point this out because this is another story that I never got to. This guy's girlfriend is a – she was on MTV, I think. She was a – she's a DJ in – she was a DJ in L.A., whatever. Now she's in New York on some TV show, but she is from Egypt, or her family is Egyptian, and she is Muslim. There has been some question as to whether Colin Kaepernick, the quarterback – that kneeled down during the Pledge of Allegiance or the Star Spangled Banner, whether he had become Muslimized. But when they were talking in the Ravens about bringing on Kaepernick, I mean, Kaepernick, his numbers are, you know, 2-1 touchdowns to interceptions. He played in a couple of championship games, and he was in the Super Bowl in a you know, he's not that old, he's young 30s, strong arm, fast guy, but there was you know, his girlfriend and he posted, or his girlfriend posted a picture of the owner of the Baltimore Ravens with Ray Lewis draped around his neck like he was a house Negro. And, I mean, would you really take the risk of bringing somebody like that on your team? I mean, that's absurd. This guy is insulting the ownership. He's insulting the NFL. And Jerry Jones, the owner of the Cowboys, just stated that that his opinion was that they shouldn't do those kind of protests, and that he thought that the celebration of the of American flag was a great, one of the greatest things in American society, which I would agree with. And somebody said it was sacred. Now, I don't know if I would go so far as to say that it was sacred, but I mean, the fact of the matter is that if you let people do whatever they want to do in the name of so-called protest, at some point that does lead to anarchy, you know? I mean, I'm all for free speech, but I just think what Colin Kaepernick did was so absurd. He was a guy, once again, like Barack Obama, who was raised by a white family. He was adopted, and he's lived a very privileged life. He went to the university on a scholarship. He's a smart guy. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But I think that he is a person who is at the same time extremely lost, and is being misled by this woman who's using him as a puppet. And it's just, yeah, I don't know. It's just absolutely ridiculous to see this. So anyway, there is the backdrop, and here's a little bit more on this, the leftism of the NFL. You have a belief in leftism or the right. Let's say you're to the far right. Does that mean that you should come into everything that you do and force the people that are part of that, that are interacting with that, to listen to, you know, is there a separation between politics? We separate church and state. Is there a separation between politics and state? Is it not true? Is it not obviously true that for a lot of people on the left, the political has taken over the function of the religious, and many of them would say, you know what, I don't believe in God, I don't have a religion, and yes, politics is the most important thing in my life. And in fact, on a functional level, politics comes in and takes the place that religion would normally occupy, and therefore these people feel justified in going to places like ESPN, where they have authority, where they have influence, and putting their ideas in, because they think their ideas are so far beyond debate that any fair-minded, any educated person is going to realize, and it's enlightenment and it's evolution and it's bringing things forward. So then you bring into the NFL what? You bring into the NFL the right to protest. You bring into the NFL the need to acknowledge socialism and Marxism. You bring into the ESPN, you demand that the viewers accept the fact that not only are our world sports the subject, you go into ESPN, the website, and you have to pick your way through soccer and all these other sports. It's an American website. The most important sports here are NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball. So why do you have to bury those to show people that you're world citizens? And they bring in gender issues. So Caitlyn Jenner is celebrated as the Sportsman of the Year, even though Bruce Jenner hasn't been a sportsman for 30 or 40 years, whatever it was when he was in the Olympics. But you make people come and you bring this stuff in and you make them gag on it. And you say, this is the measure of what it means to be human. This is why we're here. And you need to get educated. You redneck clowns need to get educated into the fact that the most important thing in society right now is transgenderism, or it's racism, or it's social inequality. You see what I mean? So then the people that are watching this are suffering because they're there to watch sports. Now, the person who's bringing all the leftism in can judge that person and say if they had their head screwed on properly, they would understand that the number one issue here is politics and transgenderism and gay rights and the importance to fight against racism and all this stuff. But that's an agenda. Sports is not an agenda. It's an activity, or it's a pastime. People are wondering why their income is plummeting, because they insist that everybody else bow down to their political beliefs as if they were gods. And in the meantime, they're practicing iconoclasm by destroying statues across the United States. True iconoclasm, an icon, is an image. It's a painting, or it's a statue. They're taking the statues and destroying them in the name of their religion, which is political leftism. 633 Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. If you disagree, you're wrong. 805-6180 to text, or Colin will be right back. Little Hank Williams for you.
Got some bright morning when this life is over.
And I am going to get back to your stories, but I just think this is fascinating. And Colin Kaepernick is just a puppet of his girlfriend. I think it is so hilarious and totally fitting that this guy is not in the NFL. Because when he gets a chance, his girlfriend goes in and insults the owner and says that he's a racist, and that the black face of the organization, Ray Lewis, arguably the greatest or one of the greatest linebackers of all time, was just a house Negro. And the girlfriend goes after that, and Colin Kaepernick is just being led around by the nose. And, you know, he's a smart guy, but really, I mean, you know, IQ brains is wasted on most people. Have you noticed that? 638, and I've got another clip here. Former anchor explains why ESPN is failing.
ESPN has been hemorrhaging viewers, millions and millions of them in recent years. The question is why? A new study suggests a sharp leftward turn by the network is a major factor in this. Deep Root Analytics looked at ESPN's viewership and found that in 2016, the network's viewership became substantially more liberal and less Republican, more Democratic, more Republican, all across the country. Apparently, conservatives lost interest in following sports if liberal politics are shoved in their face while they're doing it. Why is ESPN doing this? Jason Whitlock is a former ESPN commentator and writer, you know, co-host Speak for Yourself on Fox Sports One, and he joins us now. Jason, thanks a lot for coming on. So,
thank you, Tucker. Thanks for having me.
You got ESPN as, you know, the most powerful, the most beloved for many years brand in sports. People loved ESPN. Some people still do. A lot of people hate ESPN because of pushing politics. Why are they doing that?
I think you've asked the right question. I think cord cutting has a lot to do with their subscriber
sure.
and viewership loss. But the animosity and some of the viewership loss, I do think, is a direct result of their lurch to the left and injecting progressive victimology into the sports conversation. If you really understand sports culture and all the values taught in sports from Little League, Pee Wee on, you're never a victim. There are never any excuses that are accepted. Every coach teaches every player from 5 years old on to 45 years old. We
right.
don't tolerate excuses. We don't tolerate victimology. And now so much of the conversation by the sports media, ESPN being the leader of this, is just filled with so-and-so's a victim. Colin Kaepernick's a victim. Everybody's a victim. It's turning traditional sports fans off.
It's, I mean, it doesn't take a sports expert to predict something like that. People go to sports as a refuge from things like politics. So why would you throw it in the face of viewers? Like, what is the point of that?
I think, again, so much of the media has moved left. And I've written about this and talked about this, and it applies to ESPN, but it also applies to all the media.
Yeah.
Silicon Valley, Facebook, Google, Twitter, Instagram is now in control of the mainstream media. Everybody's catering all of their content to Silicon Valley and San Francisco values. That's far different than the old media, which catered everything to New York, traditional liberal values. The values in San Francisco, a bit more revolutionary, a bit more progressive than New York, than a traditional New York-based media.
That is a really deep point, and I think a true one, and one that almost nobody ever says out loud. So basically, the politics of a single congressional district are defining what everybody else in the country watches on TV. It just seems like a self-defeating strategy, though. It seems like they're hurting themselves.
Just think about it. When you and I grew up, everything was about making it in New York. You wanted to work for
right.
a New York magazine, New York television station. Now everything, the media is addicted to social media. Where is that control? Out of Silicon Valley, out of Northern California, out of San Francisco. Everybody's catering to San Francisco values. It's pervasive throughout all the media, and you can see it most acutely at ESPN.
Well, you must have, I mean, you worked there. You're one of the most famous guys there. You must still have friends there. Without naming them, what do they think of this?
Well, I think a lot of them are just now starting to figure out the ramifications of this. And I think there's been some complaints from some of their employees like, hey, look, we're afraid to express that we have traditional sports culture, traditional values.
Yeah.
That their ombudsman has written about a culture within ESPN where if you're slightly conservative or moderate, you're afraid to express an opinion inside there. It's a real problem at ESPN and within all major corporations.
Yeah.
As everything has gone PC,
I agree
everything.
With that.
Everybody's afraid. Oh my God, we can't upset anybody. Yeah. You're silencing people. It's a very dangerous
Sugar
thing.
50.
So, anyway, I was not going to get off on that, but it seems so indicative of the country that we're in now that there used to be a political and religious opinions. There were ideas about a lot of things that people managed to keep to themselves so that they could get along with their neighbors, with their friends, with their coworkers. And now all this stuff is being forced into the culture in a way where you just have to swallow it and gag on it. Now, March 1st, according to the Business Insider, ESPN has lost 12 million subscribers in 6 years. That's a lot. In 2016, October, a few months ago, ESPN lost 621,000 subscribers. And you can say what you want and you can defend it or whatever. Number one, people go off of experience. They go off of pleasure, you know? And people go off of the, you know, you date somebody that makes you feel something. You date somebody, you're attracted to them, but when you're with them, you were dating them because at some level they make you feel comfortable, they make you feel better about yourself. You have common ideas, common values, common goals. You get married, you have family. And it's probably better if a conservative doesn't marry a communist. But in any event, ESPN takes the pleasure of sports, which might be, to a certain extent, mindless, and it injects politics into it, and then when people complain, it says, this is reality, and these are the things that you have to accept. So it's a propaganda campaign that it's masquerading as basically, you know, it's a, what would you want to call it? An evangelical movement to people from one political system to another. And it is kind of sad, really, because you're destroying something that people enjoyed to make your point. People don't care about the point. They're sick of it, and they want a place that they can relax. And it is in the nature of the political left, as you're seeing right now with Trump. They won't sit down. They won't be quiet. Their opinion has to be heard, and it's totally irrelevant to them whether their opinion has any merit or any substance. They're going to destroy everything for everybody until they get their way. It's a childish tantrum to try to destroy Trump. We'll be right back. 523-1458-056-1805-650-646. All right, so here's James Clapper attacking the president. You know, he's not a psychiatrist, of course, but he's not afraid to say somebody's insane.
Next performance by President Trump.
Well, Don, it's hard to know where to start. It's just so objectionable on so many levels. You know, I've toiled in one capacity or another for every president since and including John F. Kennedy through President Obama. And I don't know when I've listened and watched something like this from a president that I found more disturbing. Having some understanding of the levers of power that are available to a president if he chooses to exercise them, I found this.
I think this proves, and he's talking about the speech in Phoenix, I think this proves that what most people in Washington, D.C. are of some sort of a party that's other than Democrat or Republican, and that it's like a cult. It's like if you want to call it, it's like the Illuminati. It's like whatever, you know, it's like the Crusaders, you know, go to the Middle East and develop some new novel theory that's, you know, supersedes everything else.
Downright scary and disturbing. I think Beccari is right on the money, though, that this is not a surprise. it interesting to contrast last night's teleprompter Trump performance versus tonight, which is, of course, the real Trump, just as it was in the unglued impromptu press conference at Trump Tower. So I just find this extremely disturbing.
Are you questioning his fitness?
Yes, I do. I really question his ability to his fitness to be in this office. And I also am beginning to wonder about his motivation for it. Maybe he is looking for a way out. I do wonder as well about the people that attracted to this rally as others. You know, what are they thinking, or why am I so far out off base? Because I don't understand.
You're far off base because you're a leftist inside, and you want to destroy this guy. I mean, what? Why does it have to be like, you know, to connect the dots here? These people are subversives, and they're looking to undermine the presidency, and they want a revolution. That's all there is to it. And they act like they're the rational ones. They've been attacking this guy since before he came into office, but they're rational. President's irrational. And here is Don Lemon again. Don the Lemon Lemon.
I'm just going to speak from the heart here. What we have witnessed was a total eclipse of the facts. Someone who came out on stage and lied directly to the American people.
Tell me when any anchor ever got up and said that Obama was a liar. It took somebody from Congress to stand up and when Obama was selling Obamacare and say you're a liar when he said you can keep your doctor, you can keep your hospital, you can keep your plan.
And left things out that he said in an attempt to rewrite history, especially when it comes to Charlottesville. He's unhinged.
What is the history of Charlottesville? What exactly did this guy do wrong except he didn't directly call out leftism or Nazism or whatever?
It's embarrassing. I don't mean for us, the media, because he went after us, but for the country. This is who we elected president of the United States, a man who is so petty that he has to go after people who he deems to be his enemy, like an imaginary friend of a six-year-old. His speech was without thought. It was without reason. It was devoid of facts. It was devoid of wisdom. There was no gravitas. There was no sanity there. He was like a child blaming a sibling on something else. He did it. I didn't do it. He certainly opened up the race wound from Charlottesville, a man clearly wounded by the rational people who are abandoning him in droves, meaning those business people, and the people in Washington now who are questioning his fitness for office and whether he is stable. A man backed into a corner, it seems, by circumstances beyond his control and beyond his understanding. That's
the president's not smart enough to be the president. He's not morally fit.
The truth.
He's not intellectually stable, but the media is.
Hidden away among these hallways, we find a watering hole. Yeah. The perfect.
Some other pages leapt to life here, but I just, you know, is there ever any end to this stuff? Is there ever any end to the outrage, the anger, the fury, the self-righteousness of the left? Here is Mark Stein, the Dems trying to paint everybody as a Nazi in the GOP.
It was a big day in Boston. I want to pull up a picture first, and we're going to explain this picture, do a little play-by-play. Okay, folks, you're looking.
But I just want to make the point. There's never any time whatsoever when they give him any credit, and it's always more. It's always a moral argument. Yeah, you can throw in he's a Nazi, he's mentally ill, he's unfit, he's unstable. But there's always a moral argument to throw him out of office. I've never seen anything like it. What about Obama? If anybody had a moral argument to throw somebody out of office, it was the Americans with Obama.
looking at one shot on the left, one shot on the right. This was a protest, a movement, I should say, permitted by the free speech group. Which group do you think that is? Well, in fact, they're the ones on the left. Take a look at the mass of humanity on the right. 15,000 counter-protesters. And Mark, when you look at this, you think this could be a problem for free speechers. Not the KKK, not neo-Nazis, but people who believe in free speech rights.
Yeah, I would rather we had more speech and fewer protests, because I think the less speech you have, the more violence you have. And it would be a lot better if actually we had more people having more vigorous debates rather than toppling statues in the street. And my worry about this is that actually the left is making an organized attempt to say that if you do not vote Democrat, that you're a Nazi. That's the point of this. They don't care about
Confederate. That's dangerous rhetoric, Mark.
That is, well, it is dangerous because, as you were talking about earlier, it's an explicit thing to actually tie policy differences on rather boring things like taxes and immigration to the most crude form of demagoguery. That's what we've just seen this last week. They don't actually care what Trump thinks about some statue. They don't think about whether there's any actual real connection between guys calling for Jews to be in ovens and Trump. They want to say, if you vote for Trump, you're a Nazi. So we can't talk with you. All we can do is smash up your rally.
Those statues that so many people want to tear down were erected in the South when Democrats were in charge. Does anybody remember that? I'm not saying that the Democratic Party of today is necessarily approving of that.
No,
but,
yeah.
But let's
look. I don't have a dog in. I don't.
All right. So that's where it lies. 6:59 Kelly O'Connell AM Las Cruces 5:23 14:50 and 805-6182 text 805-6180 to text and Death Row Radio. We'll be back after break on the hour.
When the troubles of the slapper roar.
All right, so here's a story that's kind of related to the ESPN story, the need to force leftism on everybody. Now, what do you think the motivation is for doing that? What is the motivation, for example, to bring in leftism to ESPN? What are they attempting to achieve? Are they trying to destroy the network? I mean, I would assume that doesn't make any sense because the people that are doing it work there and they need to have jobs. It is affecting their viability. Are they aware of that? Are they aware that as they lose viewers, that it gets harder for the company to pay salaries and to expand services? Now, you've got another situation here. I believe it's in New York, but parents upset that in kindergarten, the teachers are instructing the children about transgenderism. What do you think about that? What's the purpose of that? Here's a little clip for you.
Happy with the Rockland Charter School Academy for having transgender discussions in a kindergarten class.
And these parents feel betrayed by the school district that they were not notified.
Discussions were earlier this summer during the last few days of the academic school year.
CBS 13's Sharin Merger joins us live from Rockland, where a school board meeting just wrapped up. Sharin.
Sam and Adrian, it was quite an emotional board meeting at Rockland Academy tonight, and it was standing room only with parents and teachers speaking out tonight about a teacher who read books to her kindergartner class And also, during that time, that kindergartner was going through a transition in front of her peers, and tonight that teacher spoke out.
And what I will share over and over again is how proud I was of my
kid. An emotional Rockland Academy teacher addressing a packed house of parents, many furious about her decision to discuss the topic of gender identity inside her kindergarten class.
It was never my intent to harm any student, only to support them through a difficult situation.
The teacher defended her actions to read two books she says were given to her by a transgender child going through a transition.
The kindergartners came home very confused about whether or not you can pick your gender, whether or not they really were a boy or a girl.
Parents say besides the books, the transgender student at some point during class also changed clothes and was revealed as her true gender. And many parents say they feel betrayed and blindsided.
I want her to hear from me as a parent what her gender identity means to her and to our family. Not from a book that may be controversial. My daughter went home crying, shaking, so afraid that she could turn into a boy.
The issue was not on the agenda, so parents spoke out during Monday night's public comment.
It's really about the parents being informed and involved and, you know, giving us the choice and the rights about, you know, what's getting introduced to our kids and at what age.
Many teachers also speaking out in support of what transpired inside the classroom on the last days of the academic year.
Head in the direction of banned books or book lists or selected literature that should only be read inside or outside of the classroom. I think that that's a very dangerous direction to go.
Now, the district says that the books were age-appropriate and fell within their literature selection policy. And unlike sex education, the topics of gender identity don't require parent prior notice. But because of tonight's comment, the district will be taking this up as an agenda item next month.
All right. Sounds like there's a lot of pressure there. Okay. Very good. Shireen, thanks.
So it's up to the school. And here's the problem with statism. The problem with statism, that is the state is the preeminent authority on all things. Statism is what you have in a tyranny, because in a tyranny, only the state, only state actors, only state agencies, only the political authorities have the right to make decisions on the issues in people's lives. You've got the state coming in as an authority that is high or higher than any religion or church or God. And they're going to decide what the children need to hear. It's irrelevant what the parents want, because the children have to be informed on the issues of gender, even in kindergarten, even at 4 or 5 years old. But that has nothing to do with sex. And a child who is transitioning is brought out in different clothing. I mean, it sounds like something out of a comedy meant to make fun of political correctness. And we've got a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Aaron Kelly.
Good morning, Aaron. How you doing, and what's on your mind?
Well, I'm almost at a loss for words. How depraved and how twisted and how low can the left go to where now we're going to create transgenders by indoctrinating them at the tender age of 4, 5, or 6, or 7. This is just a classic example of the mental illness of the left. It is just sad. It is absolutely pathetic. And the fact that the school district thinks that they have the authority to influence our children to that level at that age is absolutely appalling. It's time to just homeschool every kid in America and take them away from these people. Just keep them out of their hands.
Well, I mean, I don't understand what people thought was going to happen when all these kids were shipped off to public schools in the first place. I mean, the kids are obviously, the kids are not learning about the history of their family or what the family believes.
Right. No, the state's trying to totally take over. It's basically, you know, it's like Hitler with the children. It's like Stalin with the children. Rat your parents out. Spy on your siblings. I mean, what's next? I mean, first they come up with an idea, and then they make it happen by brainwashing 6-year-olds. It's just insane to me. It's just totally – I don't know where this country's headed if this kind of stuff is continued to be permitted.
Yeah, I got you. I got to take a break here, but good points, Aaron. Thank you. All right, folks. So, all right. So you're going to fight to have the right to teach kids not to party, but to accept the tranny message, and that your gender is fluid, and that, you know, it's up to ultimately the state to decide what your child is going to believe about who they are, what their gender is. The state's going to define gender and then put the gender definition on your kid, and if you don't like it, you can choke on it. 714. I mean, when are people going to stand up and say, we've got the right to make the definitions in our house? It's not up to the state. 714, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1455, 23, 1450. We'll be back. And I've got a clip from Alan Dershowitz on the attempt to remove the statues from the country being an act like the Russians were doing to erase history.
He climbs to blue to fly. The midnight train is winding low. I'm so lonesome I could cry.
So here we go with the, well, I've got a clip from Trump, but let me first get to you the Dershowitz clip on erasing history.
Killing one woman.
Oops. There's always something playing in the background for some dang reason. Well, maybe it's off this clip here. Here we go.
All right, Jillian, famed lawyer and lifelong Democrat Alan Dershowitz calling out his own party, saying amid the battle over Confederate monuments, liberals have bigotry of their own that they can need to condemn.
I don't want to make moral equivalents. There's no comparison between the Nazis and the Klan on the one hand and some left-wingers on the other hand who may be using violence. But having said that, that doesn't give a pass to the people on the hard left who are themselves engaged in violence and also some bigotry of their own.
Joining us right now is that very professor, Harvard Law Professor Emeritus. He's the author of a new book, Trumped Up, How Criminalization of Political Differences Endangers Democracy. Alan Dershowitz, welcome back.
Thank you.
Professor, I cannot believe what I'm saying here. There's pressure on Mattis to rename military bases because they're named after Confederate leaders. In Baltimore last night, Christopher Columbus Monument was vandalized. At Columbus Circle here in New York City, they're debating on whether to take that statue down that was put up in 1890. University of Texas removes Confederate statues. Duke in North Carolina could be next. I can't go through all of this. Is there a danger in this?
Oh, of course there's a danger of going too far. There's a danger of removing, you know, Washington and Jefferson and other of our founding fathers who themselves owned slaves. Look, we have to use this as an educational moment. We have to take some of the statues that were put up more recently, for example, during the civil rights movement, and perhaps move them to museums where they can be used to teach young students about how statues are intended sometimes for bad purposes, to glorify negatives and to hold back positive developments. But the idea of willy-nilly going through and doing what Stalin did, just erasing history and rewriting it to serve current purposes, does pose a danger. And it poses a danger of educational malpractice, of missing opportunities to educate people, and of going too far.
Is there also a danger of trying to put today's values on yesterday's generations? I mean, for example, Woodrow Wilson, they say, well, he was a segregationist, but he did this in Princeton. We'll take it down. 200 plus years ago, I think 12 of our first 15 presidents had slaves. I think we can go back and forth. You can look at what General Lee did. There was a time in which General Lee was being urged by his officers, make this a guerrilla war. We lost. We don't have to quit. And he said, no, we got to bring the country back together on Lincoln's behest. And he kept the country back together like no other country has ever done after Civil War. We didn't erase their legacy. Why are we running to erase it now?
Well, not only that, but I think the implications are it's only that legacy that is of concern. Remember that President Roosevelt, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, put 110,000 Japanese Americans into detention centers. That President Lowell of Harvard imposed anti-Jewish quotas. That discrimination against women was rampant. Once you start rewriting history of African Americans in this country, you have to start rewriting history of discrimination against many, many other groups. Look, we're both a nation of immigrants and a nation of discrimination against immigrants. That's an important history for us to remember. And the other important thing is do not glorify the violent people who are now tearing down the statues. These many of these people, not all of them, many of these people are trying to tear down America. Antifa is a radical, anti-American, anti-free market, communist, socialist, hard left, censorial organization that tries to stop speakers on campuses from speaking. They use violence, and just because they're opposed to fascism and to some of these monuments shouldn't make them heroes of the liberals. There's only one point that I want to correct you on. You talked about liberal bigotry. I was talking about radical hard left bigotry. I'm a liberal, and I think it's the obligation of liberals to speak out against the hard left radicals, just like it's the obligation of conservatives to speak out against the extremism of the hard right. And one of the reasons I was critical of President Trump when he suggested a moral equivalence, he didn't quite say it, was that he has a special obligation to condemn organizations that speak in his name. David Duke claimed to be speaking in his name. Spencer claimed to be speaking in his name. The radical left right. doesn't claim to be speaking in his name. So left liberals should be attacking the hard left, and centrist conservatives should be attacking the extremists on the hard right.
And I hope he does that tonight. It'll be good. I never expect him to put 3 minutes of the 25-minute speech in a military address last night. Maybe he'll do that tonight and just make it abundantly clear.
All right, so we'll take a little break here and come back and talk to Bev Courtney, who is running for city council. Hank Williams, 523-1450 and 805-61802 text. We'll get to your text before the end of the hour. Thank you.
Ever seen a night so long when time goes crawling by? The moon just went behind the clouds to hide its face.
All right, so Trump comes into this Arizona. Here's a little bit what happened there. Oh, we do have a phone call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Donna.
Donna, how you been? What's on your mind?
I'd just like to comment briefly about the school issue, the education issue. There is a solution. If people would call their representatives and support H.R. 899. This is a bill to abolish the Federal Department of Education. And when the feds give money to the schools, the feds control the schools. And the Department of Education is totally unconstitutional and needs to be abolished.
All right. Anything else?
Well, people can also support legislation to cancel all of the current federal laws regarding federal aid to and regulation of schools, because it's all unconstitutional. These laws are unconstitutional.
Well, you don't really hear people argue unconstitutionality too often these days in terms of getting rid of a law. But let me ask you this. For all of the people who don't have the means for homeschooling, what do you suggest is going to happen to their kids?
Return the control of public schools to the state and local governments and get the feds out of the unconstitutional.
You're not answering the question. You're just restating your premise. What about all the kids in which the parents don't have the means to educate their kids?
No, I'm not saying, say, homeschool all the kids. I'm saying return the control of the public schools.
Oh, okay.
Where they can send their children to the local governments, and then they can better control what is taught in the
I gotcha. Okay. All right. That makes more sense. Okay, Donna, thanks a lot for the call. Have a good day. All right, folks, get rid of that Department of Department of Education, but you're still going to have, a school system that is, I guess, run locally. Here's a little bit on Trump's hammer.
White House correspondent John Roberts, Tom Bevin, Real Clear Politics co-founder and publisher, Katie Pavlich, news editor at townhall.com, and Matt Schlapp, contributor with The Hill. All right, John, you hear these speeches a lot. That was a stem winder.
Yeah, I mean, that was as good as anything that I ever heard of the campaign trail. And here we are, you know, 8 months into his presidency.
All right, so you have a guy that gets up, James Clapper. He's part of the establishment. He's the head of intelligence for decades or forever long he was in there. Said the speech that Trump gives is an indicative of mental illness. Now you hear somebody else comment and say it's one of the best speeches that they've heard. So it just goes to show you, and they don't have any little mini clips here of this thing, and we do have a guest, but I wanted to let you know that you've got to be very careful who you listen to, as everybody is aware of that. But I don't think people are really accepting or really getting into this idea of how totally corrupt the media is. Corrupt. How corrupt is it? It's beyond what you can imagine, because they're trying to destroy Trump because they feel like they're on a divine mission. Now, speaking of being on a divine mission, we do have Bev Courtney here today. And how's it going?
It's great. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. What have you been up to?
Just like I said, housework and gardening, and I love that. It's very relaxing, non-stressful environment.
Sounds great. So, but you want to run for office?
Yes.
So you want you actually are seeking stress?
No, kind of mission-driven, because
what's the mission?
I love America. I love the freedom and opportunity that America has afforded me and my family. And I want to uphold all of those things that I believe makes America great.
All right. So how does that apply to city council?
Local level. You have a better voice at the local level. It's easier to make a difference, to influence it for good.
All right. So what things would you like to have some influence on? What are some of the topics or subjects that you think need to be changed at the city council level?
Well, education is not necessarily a city council issue, but people pay taxes, especially property owners pay taxes for public education, and they vote on it here regularly for bonds and such things. But I would like to encourage parents to take a proactive role in making sure that their children can read. I was just finding out that our children are going to be less educated for the first time in history than their parents. So, number one, parents can teach their children to read and make sure that they're learning it in education. So I think that's just an influential thing I could do. The other thing that I'm concerned about is if anybody has run into rules and regulations in this county, in this city, it's been me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What have you done now?
Well, I haven't done anything recently, but I have quite a long history of being squeezed out of the public forum and my freedom of speech silenced.
Oh, really? What happened? Tell us one of the stories.
Well, I was the Tea Party president for 2 years, so I wanted to hold a candidate forum. And quite a few other groups hold candidate forums in the city hall, and they would not let us hold candidate forum just simply because of who we are. They don't agree with us, so they squeezed us out.
Did they tell you why they weren't going to let you?
Actually, no. Not on that one.
Who did you deal with?
Whoever the city manager was, the assistant city manager at that time.
Is that person still there?
I don't know.
And did you protest this in any way?
Yes. Actually, both political parties and everybody that heard about it agreed that all groups should get to use the city hall, not just your own political party, because the city hall is supposed to represent all people, not just partisan
just
politics.
Not just leftists.
Right.
So did the mayor say anything?
No.
Did you appeal to him? Did you send him a letter or call him or anything?
I went later to speak in front of the city council. You know, when you get to speak at the beginning, the public is open to have the conversation. And I told them that it was unfair. Well, it wasn't long after that that I heard them announcing that they were going to erase all public records.
They were going to erase all public records?
Well, so they're probably not on there anymore.
Speaking of historical cleansing, that's interesting.
I know, right?
Well, did you feel like you were involved in that decision as well?
Of course not.
I mean,
I think they might have done it because of me.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, obviously, if you're not in office, you can't decision make on stuff like that.
I consider myself very easy to get along with, though.
Really?
Yes.
How do the people who know you feel?
I would think that they would disagree.
Well, vote for Bev Courtney. She's easy to get along with. We'll take a little break here and be right back. We've got some weather for you. 523-1450-805-6180. And do we need to get these nutcases off the city council? Call in. Text in. We'll be right back. And folks, 7:38, we've got Bev back here. I invited her back because I think it's important that we get our candidates on. And since this station is on life support and the plug is about to be pulled and it's about to be rolled into Spanish music, or as Ralph would say, Mexican mariachi music, then we need to get some people on here. I had J.R. Stewart on yesterday. Anybody who's running is welcome to come on before we end it. We've got a call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who is this?
This is Donna.
Donna, round two. Yes, we're ready to be we're ready to be corrected. Go ahead. That's usually how it works. Go ahead.
Well, I'm not going to correct anything, but I'm going to say that if I lived in District 3 here in Las Cruces, I would definitely vote for Bev Courtney for city council.
Donna, if
new
you
blood up there
new blood
that believes in constitutional government.
Donna, if you really cared, you'd move so you could vote for her.
Thanks, Donna.
Well, if somebody would pay for my move, I would.
Crowdfunding. What's that? What are those pages where they get their stuff paid for? GoFundMe. So anyway, Donna, when you hear the term red tape, what do you think of? Yes.
Government.
Yes.
Government.
All right.
I think my motto is going to be obliterate red tape.
I love it. What do you think, Donna?
I do too. Oh, I do too.
All right.
Very good.
All right. Thanks for the call. All right. So how are we going to obliterate red tape?
Well, I think if the business people, anybody who wants to do anything in the public, are running against it, I think that they should rise up and demand that they vote for people who are, you know, against it. I am totally against it.
As far as you can tell, what does this city stand for from your interactions with it, from your observation? What does this city stand for?
They're progressive, and I feel like they have betrayed the public trust because Americans are expecting them to uphold American law. They have enjoyed and they have some other agenda, some global agenda, and we haven't voted on that.
Right.
I don't think most Americans approve of it.
An example would be ICLEA, the UN, this Agenda 21 related community organization. There's something 600 or more communities in the United States on it, and the goal is to dictate to communities how land and resources are going to be used. And ultimately, Agenda 21 moved the people off the land and into urban centers so they don't need cars.
Exactly.
So they don't use oil and water.
Electricity.
Electricity. And so that the wilds can be returned and balance can be restored to the earth.
No, I think that's why they don't teach children to read. They'll take them back to hieroglyphics, back to the Dark Ages.
Back to the Stone Age.
And they can draw and they can talk to each other in their creative little picture language. But I am determined that I'm going to encourage. There's no reason any child cannot read in America, and it's unconscionable. And every child should have a chance to read, and every parent a choice.
Do kids in this county read?
No.
What? How do you know?
I read the statistics. It was in the Las Cruces Sun News last month, and the numbers are in the high 70s of illiteracy.
That's stunning.
It's astonishing. I don't even know why a parent isn't paying attention to that. So,
maybe they don't read either. Hey, wait a minute. If the kid doesn't read, that means the parent doesn't read, doesn't it?
That's possible.
Well, I mean, if you're an illiterate adult, are you really going to raise your children in such a way that they're going to be illiterate?
It happened before. There was generations of people that didn't even get through high school because they had to work on their farms. They had to work on their ranches. They had to work in the family business.
I understand, but I'm talking about kids growing up in a literate family, and they don't even know how. I mean, that seems like illiteracy is a generational curse. But 70% of the kids in this town don't read?
70+%.
Oh my God!
Ranges from like 73 to 77.
What does the city claim they're going to do about this?
I don't think they claim anything at all.
Do they care?
No.
They don't care. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, sorry. I'm trying to drive, but I'm sort of on a
makeshift. And you're on a makeshift Bluetooth or a makeshift automobile?
my old flip phone is on the visor.
Oh, okay.
I'm just quick and I'll hang up.
Yeah, go ahead.
When it comes to kids and school, what blows me away about the stat she mentioned about not enough kids being able to read, I'm blown away when I go to the job site for Las Cruces Public Schools and you see a poop load of educational aides. And it just blows me away that we can't get kids to be reading and yet we've got all this extra help. You know what I mean? I'm going to hang up so I can drive because I have to go down Valley too.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for the call. Have a good day. All right. So look, I mean, what if I was the mayor or I was in the city council or on the county commission of a community where there was a high illiteracy rate, I wouldn't be able to sleep at night. I mean, it would bother me so much. Reading is so important to just having a basic life.
Yeah, future is so important.
How can you defend your rights if you don't even know what they are?
Exactly.
How do you know what your rights are if you're illiterate? I've talked to a lot of people down at the courthouse. And especially with sometimes the court will ask you if you can go and talk to somebody needs a public defender. The public defender is not there. Will you go back and go over the charges with this person? Every one of these people, I try to ask them, have you heard of the Bill of Rights is? Have you heard of the Constitution? And I mean, the vast majority of these people said, what? And then I say, you know what the 4th of July is? You know, yes. What is it? Well, I mean, it's the day we blow up fireworks. So, you know, it is an absolute scandal. Here's the question. Why doesn't the Progressive Voter Alliance take on literacy if they want to make the community better? Bev?
I think that they have a lot of energy and a lot of influence and power, and that's a good cause for them to take up.
Yeah, I mean, what could be more important to future success than reading?
Right. They could start with the immigrants and teach them English and then get them into the public school. Because if you can't read, you can't do critical thinking. You can't do anything. You can do hard labor. You can be under control of people who can read.
That's heartbreaking. All right, I've got some messages here. I wonder what Bev thinks of the 836 new policies just proposed in the new comprehensive plan and presented by city staff last night to control how the city government will force builders and developers to comply with their new unrealistic policies. I wonder if she will fight against them being implemented. If there is only one-fourth of what's, if that is only one-fourth of what's in the new city plan, then people can kiss goodbye any chances to have a successful business in this town. And what's your response?
He's absolutely correct, or she's absolutely correct.
Or
you ought to also vote for the other two conservative candidates.
Or it is absolutely correct.
So we can have a voting block to vote against it. So 4 years ago, here's just an example of what I've seen. 4 years ago, I went to Beck's Coffee, and they have this little house across from Klein Memorial Park there Mesquite, 130
real
North
nice.
Mesquite. Well, I drove by there the other day because I was checking out my district. And you know what? They can't use the parking lot for parking. There is no parking there. And you know what's in their parking lot, in their yard that they could use for parking after 4 years when I talked to them last time?
Ken Miyagashima's motorhome.
No. Weeds up to your waist. The gate is locked, so nobody, their customers can't park in their property. And I don't even remember what the detail was where they cannot allow parking in their own driveway.
Terrible.
There's weeds.
Nothing worse than weeds.
I was shocked.
It was weeds or weed? No, don't answer that. 523-1450-805-6180. We'll take our last break. We'll be right back with Bev Courtney. We've got Bev Courtney here. Bev Courtney, you said something off the air. You feel like the city's in competition with the private folk over land ownership. Could you be more specific?
Well, downtown is an example. So they're renovating downtown, and it turns out that they have a plan to buy that Amador, I guess it's a shopping mall and restaurant. After 6 years, it comes and becomes totally city property. So I think the city should be encouraging private enterprise and representing the people and not trying to go into business for themselves and competing with everybody else for the market.
All right. Well, what about that eyesore downtown with all the aluminum on the outside and it's got the fence around it between Amador and Loman? Isn't that where it is? And it's like this unfinished, it's Main Street, and it's an unfinished building.
Right,
and
right.
What if the city wanted to make things more beautiful, if the city wanted property, it's just sitting right there. Why didn't they, I don't understand, why do they allow that half-finished building to sit there for like a decade?
Probably nobody can work with the city. Any private business owner just runs up against blank walls when you go and deal with the cities. From what I understand, and I've been listening to business people, and they can't operate here. The unemployment rate has gone up for the past 5 years here in Las Cruces. New Mexico has the highest unemployment rate in the nation, and then guess who has the highest unemployment rate in New Mexico?
Doñana?
Las Cruces.
Holy cow.
So it's like 7-point-something%. That makes us have the highest unemployment in the country because they make it so hard for businesses to do business. I know one young businessman who's moved to Albuquerque. He used to have 14 employees. He has one. Right now he has one employee.
Is it his wife?
No, but he is in Albuquerque, so he comes down here. And it's because they have put so many bureaucratic regulations on him. And I want to
Let me ask you something. I believe the mayor and maybe Billy Garrett and some other people have said this is a no-growth area. Now, I'll try to be as charitable as I can. This is a beautiful area. We've got agriculture. We've got the Oregon Mountains. We brought in the monument. We want to keep the, you know, a lot of people come here to retire. And we want to keep this area pristine, and we want to keep it in the state that it's in right now. we achieve that through no growth. What is your response to that? Let's just say give them the benefit of the doubt on their intentions.
The benefit of the doubt of their intentions. So people can come and retire here, and I guess our medical industry and our hospices will grow because the skin that you have to meet the needs of the community.
We could be,
and all of our young people are moving away, including my family.
We could become the hospice center of the United States.
Oh my goodness,
Come to Cruces to die.
No.
So what is the argument against no growth? What is the argument for growth? Give us some arguments. Your obliteration of red tape. If we get rid of the red tape and we can open more businesses, what does the community have to benefit?
Well, we could have our people working and providing for themselves and their family, and they don't have to be dependent on government welfare.
A quarter of the people here under the poverty rate, a quarter just above it, and another article that I read said 40% of the people are under the poverty line, 40%. So if the mayor or anybody else gets up and says this is a no-growth area, he's basically telling that 40% of the people under the poverty line, you don't matter. Your jobs don't matter.
Well, that's keep them in poverty and don't teach them to read. And then what are you going to get?
You're going to get a perfect socialist state. Can Bev speak to the hideous nature of many of our streets in town? Could the money put into staff coming up with over 800 new policies soon to be new ordinances over 3 long years be finally used to replace our GD ugly city streets? What a downer. So what do you think? I mean, can we beautify this wretched town?
Yes, they've raised our taxes, and they need to get their priorities straight. They have money sitting there. They were boasting that they are a well-managed city, and I consider them shrewd. They are good managers. The money is there, and they just need to get their priorities right. Instead of building the Amador Place or buying private property.
Power, hold on a second here. We got a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is David. How are you, Kelly?
Good morning, David. I'm well. Hope you're well. And what's on your mind?
I just agree with Bev, and I think that one of the biggest problems that we have here is we're spending millions and millions and millions of dollars on the downtown revitalization product while the rest of our streets in this town, especially out here where I live, out on the East Mesa, where the streets have potholes galore, drainage is horrible, and nothing ever gets done. What they do out here on the East Mesa to make us happy is they throw down a fresh set of new paint stripes every now and then so that they think we'll believe that they fixed the street. But they're spending way too much money in the downtown area for their little special interests when they could be spending a whole lot more money to beautify our city. They got the boondoggle out there in the desert that they could have built more parks for our kids to be able to play because we're losing our kids faster. As fast as they graduate, they're moving away as soon as they graduate from New Mexico State.
Thanks for the call, David. Good, great points.
My kids moved away, David, because there was no work for them. But that is a priority issue. The city's job is to make sure that the infrastructure is free-flowing and people can get to their work, they can get to school, everybody has to drive their kids to school and make it easy instead of stop and go. I know when my son was in engineering school at New Mexico State University, he was telling me him and his buddy could do a computer program and they would make all the city in sync, which they do in many cities, so you don't have to start and stop, start and stop. And it wouldn't hardly cost anything. It's computer programming. And the city hired somebody. Spent thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, and what do you see? The traffic is still the same as it was. Start and stop. And so anyway, that's their job, and they need to stick to it. I want to get the people in the city to serve them, to listen to them, and meet their needs. That's the government's job in America.
I hear you. We got another call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, good morning, Kelly. It's Marty.
Hey, Marty, what's up? Hope you're well. What's on your mind?
Just want to back up to the last 2 points that I've heard on your program. The East Mesa hit a pothole, tore up my tire. By the time the repairs were done on the front end, it was more than $600. this all happened about within the last 6 months. The other thing is this lights out here. I talked to both of my daughters who, you know, school children, about traffic engineers and what they do, and why doesn't Las Cruces have traffic engineers that do something about the light? You pull up to a light, you sit there for a minute, and not one car will go. Well, 30 cars are all sitting there with their engines running, waiting for another light. The light turns.
Go ahead.
It's like that all over the city too.
It's reminds me of Mesquite Street in Loman, but we're out of time, Marty. Thanks for the call. There's a lot of stuff that's going on. If you're in San Diego, you can drive across the whole city at 30 miles an hour because they have the lights tuned. And anyway, Bev, we appreciate you running. How do people get a hold of you for your campaign to support it, to invest?
I do have a Facebook page, Bev Courtney, for City Council District 3. And you can send me an email at teamcourtneylc3@gmail.com. And if you want to make a difference.
One more time.
Oh, teamcourtneylc3@gmail.com.
All right. And go ahead. We're almost out of time.
Yeah. Vote for the other conservative candidate, Seal and Steve Montanez.
Phone number.
My phone number is 642-1003.
Thanks for coming on. Folks, have a great day. We'll see you back in 22 hours. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces. Ciao. Death Row Radio.
When leaves began to die, that means he's lost somewhere.